Hi, I'm Sally.
I'm Linda.
And I'm Ming.
Pour yourself a cup of tea and join us for this week's episode of Moving Oolong. Welcome back to another episode of Moving Oolong. And today we have for you another weekly recap. So who wants to go first?
It's like
okay,
that.
Linda.
Wait,
still fits what I was going to say.
Huh? What are you going to say?
I was going to compare it to that TikTok where it's like, and for you, I have, and then they like take off the cover off the pot. Nothing.
Oh, I hope you're ready for nothing. Yeah,
nothing.
Okay, so last time we recorded was two weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that still doesn't help me.
Oh, you still
I
have
turned
nothing?
24 last weekend. Yes.
What are your thoughts
That's
on being 24?
First year of mid-20s, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, nothing really significant. I feel like everything is the same.
Yes, queen, give us nothing.
I come from
this podcast is in shambles, I swear. Okay, well, since you brought up your birthday, I'll bring up the picnic we had for your birthday. We went to Gravelly Point in Virginia was it Friday? Yeah, it was Friday. It was really nice. It was like perfect weather. I think we said that while we were there, that like every year Linda has like perfect weather for her picnic. So we did that. Sally brought some delicious Korean food and a cake. And I brought juice. And it was really cute. It was very like wholesome, very Linda way of celebrating her birthday. And the sunset was really pretty too.
The yes, end.
Yes, you fleshed out this topic
yeah.
sentence.
Time for Sally to add on one more layer. Because huh? apparently okay. we're only talking about this.
Well, in my point of view of this birthday picnic, yeah, it was nice. I've been to I don't know how to say
uh-huh.
it.
Say it.
Gravelly.
Gravelly. Like gravel.
Gravelly. I went to Gravelly Point before, but it was nice to revisit in another season. And it was nice to catch up, like, just the three of us and not be in a huge group. Mm-hmm. I feel like it made it more chill and relaxing. Yeah, what can I say? It was good company, good food. The end.
Okay. I'm dying to hear about the wedding. So, Sally, if you want to okay. jump in there.
So, this past weekend, it was Kevin's brother's wedding. So, as Kevin being the best man, I was the plus one of the best man. So I was very involved in, I guess, the wedding stuff. So rundown of the wedding, they wanted to do a traditional like Chinese tea ceremony. And then they also had the American version. So Saturday was the tea ceremony. And basically for that, you traditionally like the elders will give red envelopes to the newlywed couple and give them like their well wishes. So they did that. And then we had like a Chinese banquet, like, I don't know, like 9-course or something style.
Wow.
And then that was it. They played a shoe game, which I think is a typical, like a common wedding game where they're like, who is most likely to blah, blah, blah. And then they raise their shoe. So that was cute. And I met a lot of the like relatives
wow.
of Kevin and his brother. And they're all like, oh, you know Chinese? And then they're also like, oh, when is it your turn to get married? So yeah, that was a lot of the weekend. And then Sunday was the regular like American wedding. So, and they did it in a conservancy in Columbia, I believe, in Howard County. And it was really cute. It's kind of like a garden. So there are a lot of flowers around. And then they did the ceremony in a little, like, I don't know how to describe it. I want to say it's like an alcove in the middle of the garden. And then they have like a nice, like, archway of flowers. And then the bride walked down this like long garden path to the quote unquote altar, but it wasn't really altar. It was just the area. And then they did like the traditional Filipino style stuff where they have like, they light a candle, they do the draping of a veil around both of them. And then they have like a unity cord around them too. And it was cute because they invited the bridesmaids and the groomsmen to participate in this, like these traditions. So they're the ones lighting candles, putting the stuff on them and then taking the stuff away. So yeah, that was nice. And then they read their vows, which is always the highlight in my opinion. And then we had like a cocktail hour and then dinner as usual and some dancing. Yeah, overall good time.
That sounds really nice. Have you ever been to a wedding where it was like multicultural before?
No, I've only been to the only one that I really remember is like my cousin's wedding, which happened last year, but both were Chinese. And then I went to like an American wedding before that. And it was just like typical American wedding stuff. So yeah, it was nice to see like both cultures represented in this wedding.
Did you get any inspiration?
I don't know.
The tea ceremony sounds nice. Like, would you want to have something like that? Or would you want to have like an American?
I think I like how they did it like 2 days of different styles. So I definitely want to have like a more Chinese style tea ceremony and like a traditional American style too. And I really like, so for the tea ceremony, Kevin's brother, his name is Shun. Well, Andy. Okay, Shun / Andy. And his wife is called Valerie. So Valerie wore the traditional Chinese, like, qi pao. Like the, well, actually, no, I don't know if hers is qi pao, but she wore some, like, traditional Chinese clothing. And then the brother wore traditional Filipino clothing. So I thought that was cool that they incorporated that into the tea ceremony night. And then the, like, American ceremony night, it was just like the white wedding dress and suits. So I like the contrast of the two styles. That was cool. I feel like if I were to do the tea ceremony, I'd make everyone wear the traditional clothes with me. I'd be like, you must, well, not you must, but like if you have traditional clothes, you should wear it. So then it'll be like,
was it just the couple that wore the traditional clothes?
There were like a few other people that wore the traditional clothing, but most people just wore like normal dresses in suits.
Also, the tea ceremony is a Chinese thing, right? Not Filipino?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's why they incorporated Filipino stuff for the American wedding, right? I think.
That's pretty special. Also, it's like really special to have it over the course of like, what, the whole weekend or like the 2 days?
Yeah. It was like a weekend long celebration, basically.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And Kevin was the best man, so he had to give a best man speech.
How'd it go?
And he was stressing me out because he was up until 2 a.m. on Saturday writing his speech. Because he had to give the speech on Sunday.
He was still writing it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But it ended up being a really good speech. And like everyone came up to him and was like, oh, I really liked your speech. Like that was such a great speech. So it was all worth it in the end.
Did you feel you got a lot of attention as, I guess, the brother and the best man's like plus one? Or not you, but like, because I feel like that's, you know, the high, that's high position compared to like just being a guest at a wedding, or
I guess like definitely more attention than just being a random guest at the wedding. But I don't know, I didn't think much of it. I think like I just said hi to all his relatives, but I didn't have prolonged conversations with them. So like most of the time I was just like enjoying the wedding and not really thinking about my status or whatever. Yes, that is all.
It's a busy weekend then. And then Linda, we had her birthday thing too. So that was all.
And I had brunch with my cohort. It was like the first time we hung out outside of class or outside of orientation.
Where did you guys go?
So that was nice. We went to a bottomless brunch place in Brookland.
Uh-huh.
Brookland.
Brookland, not to be confused with Brooklyn, New York City.
Was everyone there like an entire cohort thing or just some people from the group?
It was like all the people from my cohort, except for one girl who, my buddy, she was concussed.
Your buddy?
Concussed?
Yeah, unfortunately. Oh. But she's fine now, so it's okay. She'll make it to the next one.
Mm. So you're really bonding then with your cohort?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Everyone in my cohort is pretty chill, so I think we all get along well enough.
Do you think people like have different, like, you know, when you go to work happy hour and it's still a little bit like buttoned up to work, but sometimes people do let loose a little? Is that the case with a cohort, or is it like automatically you all are pretty?
I think like, from the start, people have been letting loose. I mean, people are not afraid to share about their lives in this, in class, outside of class. Mm. But you know, it's cool. Mm-hmm. I think ever since orientation, people have been like put down the formalities. Ming?
I don't have any updates? Wedding to report on, and we already talked about when this picnic. Dang, it's hard to remember when we do it this like every other week.
Oh, we went to the expo thing on Sunday.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You can share more about that.
We go to this 2 years. For 2 years. 2 years ago. It's like an annual small press expo, so they have different artists and authors kind of selling their works, and it's pretty big, and it's at the hotel and conference center in Bethesda. So Ming and I went and walked around, and it was very familiar because we've been to it before. But I really like how this event happens so regularly, and I can always know what to expect. And it's not something that happens a lot, having these works all together in one place, because it's different vibe than bookstores usually in the city.
I like how the authors are there so you can talk to them and interact.
Mm-hmm. For better or worse, because sometimes I don't know, I feel like kind of bad not like interacting with them, but sometimes like they probably don't want to interact with you, so it's a lot of social nebulousness, I guess. Ming, how did you like the event?
I mean, I guess the same feelings that you had, where it was really cool. We were talking a lot about how I thought that we had been going for a few more years than just 2 years beforehand. So I was like, wow, we're still going to this event like years later. And then Linda was like, it's only been 2 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was a time where we went like consecutively, and then we would go with William too. But we took a pause because of COVID. But it was nice to go back. Like Linda said, it was familiar, the same location and the kind of the same layout. But obviously different art and different authors. So it was nice. It was very nostalgic, and it felt very traditional. Like tradition for Linda's birthday, we always go to this. But it also did make me miss William and you, Sally, a little bit. So it felt like Lynn and I were zooming through because it was just the two of us. So we knew what we wanted to look at, and it didn't take that long. And I think going back to the talking to the authors or the people who are manning their booths, it's definitely a social awkwardness central kind of place, because I think the people there are the same level of awkwardness, maybe a little less, but definitely kind of socially, you don't know the norms of they want you to buy their stuff, but you don't want to pressure them to. Mm-hmm. And there was this one booth where there was a print hanging, and I wanted to look at it closer, But, you know, I didn't like want to really get up in his business, and he was standing there and I didn't really feel like talking to him. So I was like looking at it from afar, and he saw me looking at it, I guess. And he's like, you can come over. Like, I'm not going to force you to buy it. So then I felt pressure to come over, even though I didn't even want to. So I walked over and then I spent my time looking, and then I almost like part of me wanted to buy it just to like prove him wrong. But ultimately I didn't even like it that much, so I didn't buy it. But it's like those kind of like little weird
like psychological
games,
reverse psychology. Yeah.
Which is funny because it's like the people there are like the most wholesome, it seemed, or like kind, and yeah, everyone's just trying to sell their art or get the word out about it. Lynn and I had an interesting conversation afterwards though about bok choy.
Huh?
Oh, and how was that interesting?
Yeah, so a lot of the, I mean, jump in to add in Linda whenever, but a lot of the art pieces had kind of like Asian theme or like influences, or they would make a lot of fan art from like popular Asian like shows, I guess, right? And one of them was like a bok choy thing, print bag that I thought was really cute. But then Linda and I were talking about how like we felt a little uncomfortable because some of the people, a lot of the people selling it were like white people. And it was like conflicted feelings about, I really like this bok choy bag, but like, I also don't want to buy it just because like, I don't know, Linda, I'm not explaining myself how we did after the convention, but you,
Oh,
help me out.
I mean, you forgot to mention. So Ming was wearing these bok choy earrings
at the expo.
And like literally like 25 people were like, oh, are those like bok choy earrings? Like, that's so cool. So Ming was like surrounded by like bok choy.
Okay, that's a rush.
But I think we were talking about, are they trying to market to an Asian audience?
Yeah.
And if so, like, are we as Asian people like falling for that somehow by like purchasing things when it doesn't, you know, have any cultural significance, presumably, to the creator? Like, isn't it better to purchase from an Asian creator, even if like their stuff may not be as cute or something? Like, what is the value of like getting a piece that you like, or like supporting a cause that you is like more important? Yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah, that's definitely like the line of thought we were having. And I think to add on about the bok choy earrings, now that you reminded me, it was almost like because I was wearing this bok choy earrings and getting compliments on them, I was like, I had heightened awareness that I was wearing them. And so then when I came across the bok choy bag, and the woman was like, oh, are those bok choy earrings? Like, and then she like, you know, she had a bok choy bag. And so I almost felt like the exact target demographic, the specific person that would buy her bag. And, but because of that, I felt like a pressure to buy her bag, even though again, like she was white and I had mixed feelings about that. And like, I don't want to like just fall into the, I guess the trap of being like, oh, Asian people like this stuff, so like when I see an Asian person walk by my booth, I'll like perk up and like try to sell it to them. This is definitely just reading into things, and like people probably did not have these intentions at all, but it's still like that something that was on our minds, I guess, or like especially a little bit getting into like the fetishy type of art, which was definitely there a little bit, I think, just in like how people drew certain like bodies and people. I felt a little fetishy, but yeah.
This stuff probably existed when we went to the expo before, but maybe we like didn't know enough to pick up on it. Or maybe like since like something changed and now people are more aware of like Asian people will shop and buy things and have like purchasing like a unit, I guess. So I don't know, but I definitely noticed that.
It kind of reminds me of a few seasons ago, we almost discussed doing an episode on, like, I forgot the name of it, but the wave of, like, Korean dramas and, like, K-pop coming to America. Isn't there a certain, like, term for that?
How you wait.
Yeah, right? And then, like, the idea of how people like Netflix and all these other different big corporations are starting to realize that Asian and Asian Americans have a lot of purchasing power. So they're like, let's put K-dramas on Netflix and, like, all these different things. And so I think it's great for us who, like to watch and consume these things. But it's also, like, are we just seen as a unit now? Like, that's kind of how I feel when they keep releasing these movies or shows that are very, like, what we would call, like, lunchbox Asian stories of, like, oh, I was bullied in school about my, like, Asian food, or, like, very typical Asian American stories, which are great, but it almost feels like some sort of pandering is going on, or, like, you know, a lot of Asians like to watch this stuff, so let's make the same kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sally, have you seen the lawyer show on
Partner Track?
Netflix?
Yeah. Huh?
Partner Track.
Partner Track?
Yeah, it has Arden Cho in it.
No. I saw a lot of ads about it, though. That's, like, another one that's, like, I'm pretty sure they're targeting Asian Americans specifically.
Oh, my God, yeah. Wait, have you watched it, either of you?
No, that's not my kind of show.
Yeah.
Okay, I watched it because I was looking for something, like, easy to watch. And also, I won't even lie. Like, they got me with the Asian American woman lead.
With Arden Cho.
Arden Cho, she's brilliant. Also, she's really pretty. Yeah. So I watched it. And it's literally everything was, like, it was like taking an Asian American Studies 101 class. It was just very...
Wait, give a premise of the show.
Okay, so the premise is that Arden Cho is this big-time corporate lawyer, and she's trying to make partner. That's why it's called Partner Track. And so to make partner, you have to, like, basically, like, work brutal hours and, like, do a bunch of these cases. And she is, like, on the track to get partner by the end of the year. So it just follows her along while she does it. And then she, like, meets this, like, really high society guy who's, like...
He's a white guy, too, right?
Yes. They're all, right. Like, basically white men. All her love interests are white men, which is another issue I have with it, except for one Asian guy at the end. But, yeah, he's at, like, a trust fund baby. And so she's, like, dating him. But then there's this guy from her past, also white, who's, like, working in her office now. And so it's kind of like they try to combine, like, a K-drama with, like, Grey's Anatomy kind of, like, like, steaminess. But also with, like, woke in quotes, like, Asian American, a little bit of, like, Wong Fu feel in there. Because it was, like, the perfect... Like, the Asian woman lead, and then they had the sassy black gay man as their sidekick.
I saw that too.
And then the sassy white woman as her other sidekick. And they're, like, this diverse team that's, like, kicking butts in, like, law.
It's like, how can we fit every, like, represent every category of person into, like, three characters in the show?
Yeah. And they had a whole episode that was, like, basically the black character... I forgot his name, but he's one of, like, the side characters, and he's, like, basically telling this other white lawyer about what white fragility means. And it felt very, that's what I meant by, like, very Asian American Studies 101. It felt very, like, teachery, where I think maybe some people who've never heard of that term might find it, like, interesting, but I guess I already knew about it. So it just felt very, like, fake the way they, like, shoehorned it in. Kind of like Blackish, if you've ever watched that.
It's like they're trying to explain, like, deeper concepts in a very superficial, like, media kind of way.
Yeah. I think it felt superficial because, like, they're talking about all these terms of white fragility and all of that. But then at the same time, she's trying to pursue a career in, like, pretty toxic corporate law that, like, does shady stuff. And they're showing, like, success as making partnership and having a big penthouse suite and, like, making a lot of money. And they're showing, like, success in love as, like, marrying a white man who has a lot of money too. Like, yeah, that's why, like, I felt so superficial. Success. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that totally bad though? Like, we know it's just, like, some random show. Like, do you feel like most people know not to put that much importance on it? And we're just, like, watching it to, like, rot our brains, basically, like, some shows in general? Or do people are like, oh, wow, this is so, like, groundbreaking and for Asian America?
I don't know. I feel like it's more, like, reinforcing stereotypes of what it means to be, like, working hard as an Asian American, like, what is seen as success. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I saw a lot of like people on Twitter and Instagram, I guess, praising it because it had Arden Cho as the lead, and like, wow, another show from Netflix where the lead is an Asian American woman, a really strong, confident woman. But I think this goes back to our like episode that we did right after or during ECC that one year, mm-hmm. where we were talking about how we felt like a lot of the workshops were super repetitive and like, again, a little superficial. I think it the same discussion applies, where we were like, for us, it's a little like the show is a little too superficial, and like that's not our idea of what we want to see in an Asian led show. But like for other people who maybe, you know, this is their first time seeing an Asian lead in a show, or like, I don't know, it's like a good like gateway, I guess, entry entry point. Yeah, I would recommend it if you're looking for something easy to watch, but there's plenty of other options for that.
Oh man, I watched the finale. I finished it.
Oh, The Bachelor.
Yeah, The Bachelor.
Oh boy. Talk about another like superficial show.
Yeah. Should we insert ourselves as another Bachelorette podcast?
No. If we do, Sally has to start watching it, and I don't think she's capable of committing to that.
You guys can just give your two cents about the finale. Or the show in general.
It's a horrible, awful show, but I'm going to keep watching it. Linda, what are your thoughts?
I was so confused. Like, she just ran off with that guy in the middle.
Oh my God, that was so staged. Like, yeah. I feel like that's the thing about with like The Bachelorette. It's like literally the people, the leads are literally just puppets that are like being like played with. yeah, honestly, I was ready for the season to be over. I was kind of over it.
Mm-hmm. Are you gonna watch the next one with Zach? Yeah,
they chose the most plain, like white bread looking man, white bread looking and acting. Like, he has a very bland personality, but I think that suits the producers, so they can have like the bland puppet that they need.
Mm-hmm. Oh, general sampling.
Yeah, well, white bread goes with a lot of different things. So
you right, Sally.
You know, he has to be able to mix and mingle with different girls. Anyway,
I mean, that's a good point, Sally. Even though you know nothing about this man, he. Yeah, I guess that's how you get like invested into it, because the people are all within like a cinematic universe kind of.
Yeah.
And they had the other bachelorettes there, and I haven't seen the show before. So it was like, well, there's like bachelorettes who are probably like there's gonna be one every year. And it's like a whole sample of the population was like, I was a bachelorette in 1980, and then I was a bachelorette in 1979. And like, the fact that there's so many of them, like a huge, like, they're just all out there.
Like a contingency of bachelorettes?
Yeah.
That's definitely how they'll get you, like, pulled into it, because they pull from the same pool of people. So, like, you have to watch the previous season to, like, understand the background of the current bachelor and, like, et cetera, et cetera.
Wait, are the candidates also pulled from like old seasons or those new?
I mean, they'll have a big pool of candidates for The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. And then like from there, there's certain people that like kind of rise to the top as being like the most like liked by the audience or like good on TV. And then from there, the producers will pick from that pool, like who will be the next Bachelorette.
Oh, okay.
And then so they do get fresh people in, but like certain people, like they kept calling them like Bachelor royalty or like people in the Bachelor Nation or whatever will like rise to the top, and then, you know, that's how you become famous and become an influencer, because you're well liked on TV or whatever. Yes, I didn't think we were going to talk about media, but I guess that's what's on our mind.
Anything else on your mind besides media?
Is this the prompt?
Well, Ming, I've heard many stories about your therapy sessions.
That is so artificial.
That part.
Like a bachelor producer, like, speak.
Yeah.
This is just scripts.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so I guess I could talk a little bit more about therapy since I alluded to it last episode. But since our break, which was several months long, I started going to therapy, not in person, but over like video call. And I've done it now for about 2 months. I've been in therapy for 2 months. And wow. I think when I first started going, that's like all that Lynn and Sally were hearing about, because I mean, I didn't do much else besides that and climbing at this point, but it was like an addition of something into my routine, because I do the calls weekly on Mondays. So it felt like very much integrated and part of my life now at this point. And sometimes I'll like wake up that morning and be like, I don't want to go to therapy because I have nothing to talk about, or I just have too much to do at work because it's during the workday. But it's become part of my routine. And also, you get like charged a cancellation fee if you cancel too late. So it's like, I'm in it. And I really like her. Yeah.
Do you end up having something to talk about even when you think you don't?
I tell you, Phyllis, my therapist, Phyllis, good old Phyllis, really knows what to pull out of you. She earns her money.
Mm, yeah. Due.
Yeah.
She's a professional.
Which I've talked to Linda about a little bit of, like, not the validity of therapy, but like if the idea that does everyone actually need it? And like, I don't know, I'm very aware, I think, during the sessions and after, that I am paying someone to talk to me. But I think that's only fair because she's a professional and that's how she makes her living. But it still adds a different layer of like, kind of a power imbalance a little bit, because I'm like her client.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah. It's like the authenticity aspect of your relationship. It's like an exchange of goods and services. I remember like we were in the car and Sebastian was like, something about like, oh, if you like cry in therapy, that means like she's keeping you on as a client. Like she's having you like come back for more, basically. Yeah, like what makes it like feel effective and like a good use of like money? Like, I don't know, because therapy just sounds very like you can't really measure it in like cost per hour. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I've definitely made a joke or seen jokes on Twitter, but also made my own joke about how like I know that I had a good therapy session and she really earned her money because I cried. And I don't think that's necessarily a healthy way to like equate like a good therapy session, as in crying, or as in, you know, yeah, equating the worth of a session to like what you visibly get out of it, because it's so intangible. Like, even though I've been going for 2 months, which sounds like a long time, but also at the same time I hear stories of people who've been going like basically their entire lives, like, or years, and it must be working or worth it to them to like still be doing that, you know.
Do you feel like therapy is like a constant thing, or do you think like once you feel like you're, I don't know, like resolved whatever issues you want to resolve, you would like stop it and it's like an end point?
I don't know. Yeah. When I first, okay, I guess to back up and get a little bit of context, I wanted to seek out therapy because the past few months, to be totally transparent, after breaking up and stuff like that, was kind of harder than I expected, and a lot harder than I portrayed it on previous episodes of this podcast, where I was like, oh, everything's like sunshine and rainbows, we're friends or whatever. But it was still really hard, and I eventually got tired of like constantly talking to Linda or Sebastian or you, Sally, about it, and like that's what friends are for. But at the same time, I felt like maybe I should see what a professional might bring to the table, you know, their perspective on it. And so I like did a bunch of Googling, and I found a therapist just like online, someone who was like in my insurance and who I felt I could be comfortable around because she's a woman and Asian American. But it's funny because during the first session, she asked what my goals were, and like I really didn't know. Like, I didn't know that was a thing that therapists asked about, like what your goals for therapy are. So I kind of like made them up. Of like, I don't know, I'm going through a hard breakup and yeah, that sort of thing. And then we talked about it, but literally like two sessions in, I think I was like at finally like coming to terms and at peace with like being like ending that relationship. And honestly, now we don't really even talk about the breakup at all. So I don't know if I'll keep doing it weekly, but for now I am, because that's what she suggested. And again, a tiny little voice in me is like, maybe that's just to get her bag, but also like, I feel like that's a common cadence. So I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe I'll stop doing it once, if I ever move or like, I feel like I don't have anything to talk about, or maybe I'll change like how often I see her, but I like it for the consistency's sake for now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sally, have you ever considered trying therapy?
I've considered it in the sense like I've heard that it's good for you and stuff. So I've considered like what it would be like. But when I thought about it, like, I don't, like Ming says, like, I don't really have anything I want to talk about in therapy. Like, I don't have any, I guess, pressing issues. So I'm not sure what I would be like in therapy for, which I'm sure like the therapist could pull something out of me, but I don't know. Like, I don't feel like the need to go to therapy right now. Mm-hmm. What about you, Linda?
I've always kind of heard like everyone should go to therapy or try it, because even if there's like not anything wrong, like mental health still exists. But like, how much of that is just like this like psychology industry trying to get
big psychology,
the industrial complex or something? Because like, that also sounds too prescriptive. Like, how can something apply to everyone? And like, the theory makes sense that you should go even if there's nothing pressing, because it's preventative in the long run. Like, you don't want to wait until things get bad to seek help. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like there needs to be a compelling reason, or you won't be like motivated to like put in the work of trying really hard to like reprogram yourself mentally, essentially.
Yeah. I feel like that's also like, why do I need to be reprogrammed? I feel like I'm fine the way I am.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's kind of scary about
it's like therapy. Telling you that you're wrong when you think you're fine.
Yeah. Even though sometimes there is something wrong, and I don't know, it's so hard to know like yourself if without a diagnosis, because those aren't totally like true either. So yeah, very complicated.
But would you say it's a pseudoscience?
Oh my god, what is gonna get canceled?
Okay, can you define a pseudoscience?
Like, it's not backed by hard data, it's just people like things people made up, is like how I see it, at least.
Like, psychology, like, itself is made
up. Or? I guess it's like kind of arbitrary, you know.
Is that what you think, Sally? Is that untrue?
Just a general thought.
Okay.
A possibility.
I'm sure there have been like studies or whatever, because we haven't really, I don't know that much about psychology or therapy as like a preventative or a treatment, but I mean, even anecdotally, I know some people who have like seen really great success, whatever, however you define success, from therapy. So it's definitely in the, also in the, whatchamacallit, the shared collective society of like the idea that that therapy is a good thing, like you were saying, Linda. Like, it's definitely a thing that's going around now where like everyone should do therapy, or like it's a green flag if you've seen a therapist, that sort of thing. I will say, to address the thing that you said, Sally, about like needing to be fixed, I definitely had that feeling going into therapy and like being super nervous about it, because I know that I have a lot of like insecurities and flaws, and I wasn't ready for like someone to like say, I'm like, you're messed up, like you need to be fixed. But First of all, I think there's different approaches to therapy. Like every therapist has a different approach, but my therapist is like super good at like never saying that I'm like messed up or that something's wrong with me or the way I'm thinking is wrong. Which is interesting because sometimes I've noticed like when I'm telling her about my feelings, I'm like, oh, this is probably messed up or like I probably shouldn't like think this way. But she's like, no, that's how you are. So instead of like trying to fix me, she kind of tries to like redirect how I think in terms of like, why do you think this way? Or like, what do you think maybe in your childhood or like just when you were being brought up, like caused you to think this way? So I don't think it's necessarily, at least for me and my therapist, it's not like fixing. It's more just like understanding why I act this way or why I think this way. And then maybe because I understand it, it'll help me like reflect on it and then maybe change if I want to. That's kind of her approach. She's definitely like super gentle, I've noticed. I actually did a call with a different therapist a few months before because, you know, just like an intake, get to know them kind of call. And she was not gentle. She was definitely a little more, I think she called herself like more strict. And like she said, there'll be homework for you to work on. And like, I don't like beat around the bush. And like, I'm really there to help work with you and like basically be your like brain's personal trainer or something like that. Like she was pretty like a little aggressive, I think. And that kind of turned me off. And also she had a super long wait list, so I didn't go with her. But I think maybe finding the right person. I've heard a lot of stories of like people who would try several therapists in a row. But yeah, I am also, I think the idea of like everyone should go to therapy is pretty, that's a pretty like privileged statement as well too, because it does cost money and time. Out of, especially if you're going weekly or even like bi-weekly, that's like, I can do it because I work from home and my boss doesn't ask about that 1 hour meeting that I put on my calendar every week. But, you know, not everyone has that. So I think that's something that should be considered as well when you're like recommending everyone do therapy, you know? I don't know. I don't know. Have you ever talked to your other friends or family about mental health or like therapy? I don't think we even talked about it that much beforehand either.
Definitely not with my family. It's still, I think, like there's a stigma behind talking about it. And I guess I never brought it up to my family, so they never found a reason to bring it up with me as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. For me, like I never felt like things were bad enough that I would bring it up. And right now, since I'm not living at home anymore, I don't think I would really bring it up to my parents. I would just try to like find a therapist if it came down to that. But yeah, I'm not sure what would happen if I did bring it up. Like I feel like they would have been supportive, but like it just wasn't that like. Like if things were bad and if I brought it up, it might make it seem worse. So that might be.
I feel like even if things weren't bad and I brought up like wanting to try therapy, they would already assume that things are bad.
Yeah. That was the case with my mom. Like she had a super dramatic reaction because I'm still on her insurance and I needed the insurance information to see how much my copay would be that I would be paying for. And so I asked her about it and she's like, is something wrong? Like, do we need to like sit down and talk? Like what's happening? Like, and she, I guess as soon as she heard therapist, she thought that like I was in a crisis or something like that. And like needed like psychiatric help or even like, you know, something more extreme than just me wanting to talk to someone. And then once I explained it to her, she was like very supportive of it. It was like, oh, okay, that's good for you, you know, getting to try it. But yeah, therapy and mental health is not a thing that my family talks about really. And honestly, even like I kind of asked you guys, like even in our friend group, it's not a really big thing. I think we all heard of therapy or like at least I heard my roommate Hannah doing it in like early college. And that is like the first I heard about it. And I knew there was like therapy on campus. And then actually Sebastian went to therapy a little bit and he had raving reviews about it and I was like, okay, if Sebastian is doing it, you know, maybe I could get something out of it too. But I kind of almost saw therapy as like not even in a clinical like crisis sense, but honestly in like a, oh, that's interesting that someone is like literally being paid to get talked to. Like, I wonder what makes them so great to be get money from this and make this their career, you know? Almost like, so out, like curiosity. Yeah. Yeah. Like when I was doing my intake calls with a few different therapists, they would ask me why. And I would be like, oh, like I journal and I'm pretty reflective about my feelings, almost too reflective. So I thought it would be almost like a natural next step to just try and see what a therapist would bring me.
Do you feel like the conversations are like superior to like peer-to-peer conversations? You know, like it's not something a normal person can just do. Like, do you sense that there's like techniques involved, or is it, does it feel like you're talking to someone?
Lina, you're gonna like post up and fight Phyllis.
why
No, our talks are very different. I think, like, obviously the three of us have like the history. Like, I've known you guys for so many years and you're the same age as me. You know the people in my life. So it's like that familiarity you'll never get with a therapist, I don't think. Like, even now when I talk to her, I talk to her about you guys and like the friends in my life. I have to be like, oh, remember last session when I mentioned that one girl? What, you know, like you always have to like refer back and like she's looking at our notes and it's just, it takes you away.
She has like a web, like a diagram of like all honestly, your relationships.
I should make her a PowerPoint of like everyone in my life. But sometimes I don't even use people's names because I just don't feel like bringing it up. And then
you should give us all like a pseudonym. That way you can.
She already knows the two of you.
Oh, okay, never mind. It's too late.
I'll say that we're not friends anymore, and there's two new girls in my life.
She'll be like, "Ming, what happened?"
Yeah, that'll be a crisis. Do we need to talk about this? Yeah. No, and then she definitely has techniques. Like my therapist, the way she does it, I was hoping for more of like the stereotypical, you lay on a couch and kind of like just talk. Like, I just wanted someone to talk to, but she is, while she's not like super like homework and like harsh or whatever, she definitely has like mindfulness practices and like techniques, she calls them, to like help with anxiety. Or she's very much in tune with like how the physical body connects with the mental, your mental health. So she brought up acupuncture and like pointing out different points in your body that can help when you're feeling anxious. There's this thing called, okay, maybe I shouldn't, I don't, emotional freedom technique or something like that, tapping. Anyway, it's like something that you do that she's been teaching me because apparently I need a lot of emotional freedom from my feelings. And it's like you tap on these specific points in your body, like under your eye or like at the top of your head, and tapping while expressing your feelings, like your anxiety or if you're being upset, or even like if you're hung up on someone, talking it out while tapping apparently like aligns your physical like stress and like all that, you know, anxiety.
So are you doing this during therapy while you're talking? You're like,
yeah, it's really weird. it's so like, I have to make sure my door is locked and like my work laptop is closed because it's so like, I feel so self-conscious doing it because she's literally talking me through it and like I'm doing it along with her. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of embarrassing. And I'll even tell her that. I'll be like, honestly, I feel like an idiot. Or I'll say like, oh, I don't really see myself doing that. And then so she'll adapt it. And then like, I'll go and practice it throughout the week. Or like, she'll ask me like, oh, did you try tapping? And I was like, not really, because it just didn't feel natural. And so something she recommended is like, oh, maybe just do it like on your hand, you know, like scale it down.
Mm-hmm. So kind of soothing.
Yeah, I think it actually, there's a lot of points on your face and your head that, and your, I think right here on your, under your collarbone, that for some reason it's like been studied that it helps release pressure basically. But yeah, she has a lot of those techniques, which, I mean, Linda, unless you're hiding something from me or Sally, like, I don't think you guys would have recommended that for me. But at the same time, who's to say that, like, I would have actually needed it? I don't really know, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you're, like, vitamins or something, like, you don't know if it works in the long run.
Yeah, maybe it's even just the act of, like, setting aside an hour every week to, like, talk about my feelings. is enough, you know?
Yeah, like that structure.
Yeah, because I'll be crying every session and I feel so like, I don't know, weightless after it. Mm-hmm. But I kind of had more of a, I guess, a practical question for you guys, even though you said right now you're not considering therapy. But if you ever did, when I was looking for a therapist, it was pretty high on my list that they were, first of all, a woman and like Asian American. Do you think that would have mattered as much to you guys looking for a therapist or honestly, even any healthcare person?
I think so. At least for a therapist, I think that's important because like you said, like they would bring up your kind of like stories of your childhood and like background. So I feel like if they're not coming from a similar background as me and like a similar standpoint, they wouldn't be able to relate to me or like tell me what I needed to hear.
Yeah. Like not even gonna lie, I would have cringed so hard if it was like a white person telling me to do acupuncture. Yeah. but a lot of times she would use terms like intergenerational trauma or like, you know, things about being a minority or being an Asian woman that like, that was cool that she already used those terms around me and I didn't have to, I guess, explain that experience to someone when like I'm literally paying them to kind of already get it. Yeah. But those are all things you can like filter by or like look for, I guess. But then also I was like second guessing that because I was like, am I putting too much pressure on her to like fully understand me because we have the same demographics?
Yeah, I guess if someone has the same demographics, they might not necessarily be similar to you, like personality wise. Like we see the difference between Asian people from two different counties are still pretty different, even though we share like same like second generation or like other factors. So I guess you can't really predict, but it is more likely to have familiarity if with someone who shares more.
Yeah. I think being adopted was also on one of the lists, or understanding adoption was pretty high up there. And that was like finding a needle in a haystack. Like to be all those things and be in my mother's insurance, that was impossible to find. So I just like, I filtered it by like, and asking her straight out during the intake call, like she had experience working with adoptees and she said she did. So like that was important to me as well. But I'm noticing that a lot of the things we talk about in terms of like, she loves talking about attachment styles and like how like the way you were raised as a kid influences you now. I thought adoption would be coming up every other second because a lot of times like I just assume that like, oh, I feel this way because I was abandoned at birth or like make those jokes. And honestly, a lot of the time it's not. It's like something that, you know, might need be processing like, like when I was in first grade, we talked about that a lot, surprisingly. Mm. So I think, honestly, therapy would surprise you in like what you think you would talk about versus like what you actually do, depending on the therapist, of course. You know, but
Should we do like I guess mental health question? Because I'm curious about how you guys would describe it. Like if someone asked like, oh, how is your mental health? Or like, how are you feeling? Like what would you guys say? That question sounds kind of like jarring, but I am still curious.
Okay, ask the question.
What's your mental health? What is, or how is?
Wait,
what is it?
Like not define it, right? Not define.
No.
Okay.
Yes.
Sally, do you want to go first?
I think it's fine.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know.
If I was your therapist, I would have to work so hard.
I'm fine. Question mark.
Question mark.
I don't feel like I need or anything specifically to work on right now. Yeah. I feel like I'm in a pretty constant state. Like, before, okay, maybe because of my like environment too, I'm pretty happy with my schooling right now. Like my classes and my lab work is going pretty well. So I'm like, I feel like stable. Mm-hmm. But I think before in my previous job, like there were some times when like my experiments weren't going well, or like my relationship with my mentor was kind of rough. Like then I would be more like up and down. But yeah, right now I'm like, okay. I think, yeah, definitely my environment, my current environment has to do a lot with my mental state, I guess.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
Okay, I'll go and then Luna can finish since she asked the question. I think like you, Sally, my mental health, like honestly, it varies maybe a little bit more than you since you said you're a little... you're feeling stable and like constant, but I think it varies depending on like my environment, and that could be anything from like how work went. Like today work was pretty stressful, so maybe my mental state is not that great right now. But even like going to get a coffee on the weekend will like really brighten it. So I think it's okay, maybe this is not a good word because it doesn't have a good connotation, but like volatile, like it's really being influenced, I think. Mm-hmm. Very easily, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. Like, you know, when people on TikTok or whatever are like, oh, just like treating myself to a $7 latte, you know, for my mental health or whatever. It's yeah. Literally like sometimes I think that just like doing those little acts of like taking care of yourself or, you know, spending a little bit of money on yourself has really helped. In addition, of course, to therapy. But I think it's like noticing those details about me and like what actually makes me happy and what I want to do has helped a lot. Like, for example, I'm noticing now sometimes like climbing is not good for my mental health or not as good as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was getting out a lot of my like frustration and like whatever in climbing. And now that I have therapy and I'm like feeling more calm in general about that, it's honestly sometimes makes it worse when I fuck up a climb or like I can't mm-hmm. send something, then I feel bad about myself. So I think realizing that things will change what brings me happiness and what doesn't.
Yeah. I think echoing what you're saying, like I think being in control of like how I'm feeling and listening to how I'm feeling every day also helps. Like I might have some things planned or like if it might overload my schedule, but like if I listen to myself and like see what I actually want to do and only do things that I want to do and not like overload myself, that also helps me out so that I don't feel like overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I'm only doing things that I actually really want to do. So like sometimes when like the whole group is going climbing and I'm like, I'm not feeling it today, I don't go, even though everyone's going.
This turned into a climbing hate. Wow, what a change in one season. I think that's a difference between like even, I mean, I'm speaking for myself, but even in like college, like I would have definitely done something just because like, oh, like it's college, I need to do it mm-hmm. or whatever, or like mm-hmm. my friends are doing it. But I think a little bit of being more independent or growing older is being like, no.
Yeah,
like I don't feel like doing no. it. Yeah. Okay, Linda, what about you? How's your mental health?
I think I like how you both of you said like being aware of feelings is important, knowing like what helps, because I feel like if I have like a strong emotion, I just kind of want to detach from it immediately. Like I want to just like self-regulate and like not deal with it anymore, which can be helpful in some cases, but not really, because you're not really understanding like what is happening. You're just trying to make yourself feel better as soon as possible, which I get that it happens. But I feel like part of getting older is like you experience the same feelings like over and over. So you kind of like know, you can kind of predict what's going to happen. Like if I do something that I know I'm going to like be like shit afterwards, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for it now. You know, just a 24-year-old talking.
We've come full circle.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And you can find us on Instagram at Moving Along Pod and check out our Medium blog for all of our bonus contents. You can follow us there at movinglong.medium.com.
Until next time.
Bye.